conductors who destroyed our once great passenger train system by telling us that we Americans deserve the independence that comes from a glorious new doctrine of one person, one car. Yeah, the independence of being stuck in traffic jams. As early as the 1930s, giant corporate consortiums formed to buy out more than 100 of America's networks of streetcars and interurban train systems. Not to run them, but to rip out the tracks and pave over the rail right-of-ways to make roads. The biggest of these consortiums combined the enormous political and PR power of General Motors, Standard Oil, Firestone, and Mack Trucks. Likewise, corporate profiteers mounted a new offensive in the 1990s to undermine the higher speed potential of Amtrak's Acela trains, funding such coke-headed front groups as Cato Institute and Heritage Foundation to push hokey analyses branding Amtrak as a slow train to collectivist hell. They also bought trainloads of politicians who are still promoting the fabricated studies and talking points of the petro cabal to wreck as much of Amtrak as they can and derail fast train proposals. Railroad executives themselves, preferring the oligopolistic and very profitable freight business to passenger travel, play along. This is Jim Hightower saying, there's no economic, technological, geographic, budgetary, or conceptual barrier to our country having the best, most effective, state-of-the-art train service in the world. The reality is, the U.S. is in the caboose of transportation innovation only because special interest politics continues to thwart our national will, leaving us with a rail system that's a national embarrassment.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Say hey, it is Monday. Time is 5:33. Right here at 90.1 KZFR. Listening to Say Hey, Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio program. My name is Jake. Noobs will be along shortly. And there's plenty to talk about today. Plenty to squeeze into one quick half hour. Say Hey, of course, made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Buffalo Wild Wings, featuring 36 beers on tap, wall-to-wall HD TVs with nonstop sports, wings, and more at 801 East Avenue. Open every day, 11 a.m. till midnight. More info at buffalowildwings.com. Yes, where to even start? Because there's so much going on over the weekend, it's hard to pick a spot. But I think it's worth starting with Golden State winning their 72nd game. We had talked about it plenty. Everybody's talked about it plenty. And their pursuit of the 95-96 Bulls, who won 72 games, the best record in NBA history, 72-10, regular season, of course. And the Warriors got to that point the other night in San Antonio, where the San Antonio Spurs had not lost all season. So not only do the Warriors tie the Bulls with one game to go, but they do it in San Antonio against the Spurs, who are now officially the number two seed, which happened over the course of last week as well. But the Spurs played that game just like they would a playoff matchup. They had all their starters in. Kawhi Leonard played like 39 minutes. It was, for all intents, a playoff game. And the Warriors beat them, 92-86. Hotly contested, as you might imagine. The Spurs played fantastic defense, but so did the Warriors. They hadn't played particularly well against Memphis the night prior. but they had also just played the Spurs before that at home and won after losing a couple of games at Golden State for the first time all year and really having kind of an embarrassing loss to Minnesota, which was a game that nobody saw them losing, especially after having just dropped their first game at home to the Celtics. So it was a bit of a wake-up call after that Minnesota game, and they turned the ball over something like 26 times. We're just playing sloppy, careless, kind of relying on talent alone to win, as they've been doing a bit too much in the second half, playing down to the level of their opponent and so forth. So that was definitely a slap in the face, losing to Minnesota. They got it together. They beat the Spurs at Golden State. They really put the pieces together after a sloppy game at Memphis where they only shot 27% from distance. And then they come out and win in San Antonio. I wouldn't say it was unexpected, but you would not have been in the minority had you picked San Antonio to win that game. So Golden State is, in fact, the number one seed. They will be playing, obviously, the 8th seed in the Western Conference, who right at this very moment is the Utah Jazz. And it looks as though that will be what it comes down to. It looks like it's going to be Warriors-Jazz in the first round of the playoffs. And that was just over the Rockets, who are right now 39-41. And if you're a Warriors fan, you got to assume they're going to beat whomever they play in the first round, of course. But the Rockets certainly would have been the inferior opponent, in the sense that even though they're only two games apart from the Jazz, they don't have the heart that a young Jazz team has. The Rockets were in the Western Conference Finals last year, and the crowd's not as into it. Everything about the Rockets is a lesser opponent, even though they're only one or two games separated from Utah. Utah is definitely a hungry team that's played the Warriors tough all season. The Warriors are going to win that series, but it's definitely going to be a little bit more difficult, you might say. But going back to the regular season, Warriors will now head into, well, back to Golden State to play Memphis again with a chance to set the all-time record of 73 wins, that would be. They would finish the season 73-9 if they win on Wednesday. That game will be on ESPN 5:30. Or pardon me, actually, I believe it's going to start 7:30 Pacific. I don't think they prime-timed that one, so it'll be a regular start, 7:30 Pacific. And I would expect them to beat Memphis, who just, you know, are a little beat up, 2-8 over their last 10, a lot of injuries. This is not the same Grizzlies team that went to the Western Conference Finals a couple of years back. It's a game the Warriors most definitely should win. I think they will win. I think they will come out having the greatest regular season record of all time, which is incredible. Of course, none of that matters if they don't win a championship this season, which I know they can. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to beat the Spurs. I'm not going to guarantee that or anything in a potential Western Conference showdown that everybody wants to see. I'm not going to guarantee that they beat, say, the Cavaliers or whomever they might go on to face in the NBA Finals, but I know they can. If the Warriors play their best game, just like last season, they're going to beat anybody in the league. And if they keep the turnovers to a reasonable amount, they're going to have a little more than most teams because of the pace of play they use up and down the court. But if they can keep turnovers to a reasonable amount and still defend, they've gotten a little careless at times recently, like I said, kind of just relying on talent alone or maybe Steph to bail them out late. But if they do those two things, they're going to win. It's pretty much, that's all there is to it. If they defend and limit turnovers, they're going to beat you. So I expect the Warriors to get back to the finals, and I expect them to win. So we should wait and see. I most definitely want to see them play in the Spurs. I think everybody does. That's the matchup that I can't remember the last time a Western Conference or any conference finals would be so highly anticipated if it were to go Warriors-Spurs this year. That would be a really, really big deal. A bigger deal than the finals. Absolutely would be a bigger deal than the finals. Just like the years when the Niners were facing the Cowboys in the NFC Championship games, those were bigger deals than the Super Bowl. That's how it would be this year if the Golden State Warriors face up against the San Antonio Spurs in the Western Conference Finals, which I think probably will happen. Doesn't mean that the Thunder and, you know, teams of that ilk, the Clippers, doesn't mean they don't have a chance. A hot Trailblazers team, but I'd be shocked if it wasn't Warriors Spurs. So we'll see. Eastern Conference is going to shake out right now. Cavaliers are two games up on the Raptors, obviously. It's only one or two games left in the season, depending on your schedule. Raptors, Hawks, Celtics, eligible there. But Cavaliers will probably be the favorites to win the Eastern Conference still, despite not playing great down the stretch. But watch out for a team like the Celtics. They've played fantastic in the second half. 7-3 in their last 10 right now. The Hawks have won three in a row. The Raptors have won a couple in a row. So there's no guarantee that the Cavaliers roll into the finals as we thought they might earlier in the season. But still contest there. Let's move on for a minute here on Say Hey. Talk a little bit of baseball. Or you know what? Maybe even more so than baseball. I think the biggest story coming out of yesterday has to be the Masters. If you're a golf fan, there was high drama at Augusta at the Masters this week. Obviously the first major of the season. And that would be Jordan Spieth with a 5-stroke lead after the front nine, going on a tear, just looking like he was going to walk away with it on Sunday. And then within three holes, going from a 5-stroke lead to being down three, he goes bogey, bogey, quadruple bogey in three holes on 10, 11, and 12. And hole number 12 was one of the all-time classic meltdowns for any professional golfer, and the fact that it happens at Augusta always makes it an even bigger deal. And number 12 at Augusta is a very iconic hole in golf, with the lake and the big sloping green. And he just kind of muffed his first one into the drink, takes a drop, and then beyond the muff, just hit the fattest, chunkiest, worst wedge you'll ever see a big-time golfer hit, and it barely even made the water. That's how bad he hit it. It looked like something that I would do or you would do out at Bidwell. It was that bad. And he goes on to lose the Masters to Danny Willett, the first Englishman to win the tournament since Nick Faldo in 1996. And it's kind of a big deal all the way around. A, that Jordan Spieth just had a flat-out meltdown. He's the world number one. He's very nearly won five consecutive majors. He's won two of the last five, coming second twice and fourth on the other. The fact that Jordan had the meltdown, and then that Danny Willett, the first Englishman to do it in many years, he's a young man. He was a very quiet number 11 in the world coming into the tournament. Now he's cracked the top 10. And this is the kind of guy that when you listen to the prognosticators talk, the people that really know golf, they talk about this not being a fluke, that you can expect him to be in contention for all the big tournaments. He's played very well quietly over the last year. Being from across the pond gets a little bit less attention here in America. But he had he was very classy with the press and funny and engaging. And this is the kind of guy that if he continues to play anything like he did over the weekend, Danny Willett will be a name that you know in golf from this point forward. For Jordan Spieth, he's going to have to rebound because that was a crushing, just humbling experience, and it was hard to watch. It was hard to watch him fall apart like that after looking like he was rolling to his second consecutive green jacket, which would have put him in company that was beyond exclusive in terms of winning two in a row and at his age at 22 years old. Right up there with the likes of Jack and Tiger. And that none of that changes. It just means that he had one of the all-time meltdowns, and now he has to rebound. So I don't think it's going to affect him long-term. He already does have a couple of majors in his pocket. It's not as if he's, you know, 27 years old and just blew his first shot. This is not DJ we're talking about here, who may never get one just because he can't play well down the stretch. But I would look for Jordan Spieth to rebound in a very strong way and win another major this year. I don't think that is a big prediction at all or a bold prediction that he will, in fact, still win a major in the coming season. But high drama out there at Augusta this week. Very, very exciting stuff if you didn't catch any of it. So we'll wait for the U.S. Open. It's not that far away. It's coming around before you know it. And right now here on Say Hey, let's take a quick moment to do the CSU Chico Weekly Wrap-Up, as brought to you by Jordan Booth, intern here, and really has been following Wildcat sports well for us thus far. Let's see what Jordan has to say about it this week.
All right, KZFR listeners, you know what time it is. It's time to get caught up with your Chico State Weekly Wildcat Wrap-Up. Once again, I'm your host, DJ J Pounds, bringing you everything related to Chico State and Chico State athletics. Well, let's get it started with the men's side. In baseball news, the Wildcats put together some lackluster performances over the weekend, only winning 2 out of 5 games this weekend, splitting a 2-game series with Cal State East Bay, and only winning 1 game in a 3-game series against Cal State Dominguez Hills, bringing their record to 24-11. The Wildcats look to get back on track this weekend against Cal Poly Pomona. In men's golf news, Chico State's men's golf team will participate in the Hanny Stanislaus Invitational today and tomorrow in Turlock, California, at the Turlock Golf and Country Club. This will be the last regular season test for the top-ranked Wildcats as they look to capture Chico State's second national title. Chico State won its first national title in 1966, 50 long years ago. In men's track and field news, Chico State competed in the Chico State Distance Carnival and Chico Twilight Invitational over the weekend, putting on an amazing display of skill, strength, and speed, with breakout performances from Nolan Nagel, Michael Good, Kelly McConnell, Tristan Lake, and Dylan Smith. The Wildcats look to build on their success with another busy weekend, where the Wildcats will compete in the Long Beach Invitational, the UC Davis Woody Wilson Classic, and the Mount SAC Relays. Well, that's it on the men's side of things. Now let's throw it over to the ladies. In softball news, the Lady Wildcats put on a show this weekend, sweeping Cal State Dominguez Hills in a 4-game series in blowout fashion, bringing their record to 38-10 on the season. The Lady Wildcats look to continue their magical 12-game win streak next weekend against Cal State East Bay as they continue to sharpen their claws for the postseason. After winning the Sonoma State Spring Invitational a week ago, behind an outstanding performance from Bianca Armanini, the Chico State women's golf team is still in the hunt for an NCAA championship berth as they wrap up the regular season Friday, April 22nd, as part of the 18-hole Battle of the Bay at Pacific Grove Golf Links in Pacific Grove. In women's track and field news, the final home meet of the season brought out the best in the Lady Wildcats with a multitude of personal bests, provisional qualifying marks, and record book entries. With impressive performances from Brooke Whitburn, Laura James, Bailey Moss, Kayla Lawson, and Ruby Davis, feelings that this year's edition of the Cats is only beginning to reach their potential as the CCAA and NCAA track and field championships draw near. Well, that's it for this week's edition of the Chico State Weekly Wildcat Wrap-Up. Once again, I'm your host, DJ J Pounds. Much love, and thank you for listening to your community power radio station, 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico.
Thank you very much, Jordan. Really appreciate the fact that Jordan Booth does that for us here on Say Hey and in KZFR. That is good knowledge about Wildcat athletics. We really do appreciate his work around here. And getting back to it on Say Hey, talked a bit about the Masters, talked about Golden State, a little bit on the NBA playoff picture. I'd like to touch now on the first week of baseball gone by. It was an exciting one, whether you were a Giants fan or an A's fan locally. Giants take 3 of 4 from the Dodgers over the weekend in a hotly contested series, and probably a preview of how the rest of the year is going to go. Every single game in that series was up and down, back and forth with the score. There was walk-offs. There were blown leads. The Giants wind up coming back from a 5-0 deficit after the first inning yesterday. Cueto gives up 5 in the first, and then the Giants go through and wind up winning the game 9-6. They had blown the save the day before, the Giants had. Sonny Casilla didn't get it done. George Contos didn't get it done in extra frames, despite the fact that Madison Bumgarner homered off Clayton Kershaw again. Ariel Dranza hit a home run off Kershaw. They lost that game 3-2. Night prior was a wild one where the Giants had not a single hit off of Stripling, his first start in the big leagues, Dodger pitcher. Was taking a no-no into the eighth, goes over the 100-pitch count because he had coming back from Tommy John surgery, and he's a young guy. So they yank him at 100 pitches with no hits. Backup catcher for the Giants, Trevor Brown, winds up clocking his first home run of his career for the Giants' first hit of the game, ties it up 2-2. They go on the win on a walk-off Brandon Crawford home run. They only have two hits in the game, both home runs. They win 3-2. That's the kind of wild weekend that it was. And then on opening day at AT&T on Thursday, Dodgers haven't given up a run in the first 3.5 games going into the fifth. Giants then score 12, and they win 12-6. So it was a wild one for Giants and Dodgers. And the A's, after a really poor start against the White Sox at home, where they just didn't look good in that opening series, they go and sweep the Mariners in Seattle over the weekend. And that was the first time that had happened in a long time. Seattle getting swept by Oakland to start the season. Coco Crisp winds up with a big one for the A's yesterday in extra frames. That's got to be an encouraging thing after the A's get off to a poor start. And here's how it sounded.
Deep to right. And that baby is gone.
3-1 fastball. Turned on it. And a huge home run for the Athletics in the 10th inning.
That's a biggie.
So the A's wind up sweeping the Mariners after a poor start to the season, and they're 4-3 to start their first week. So that's promising for A's fans, even though it was a little bit rough losing one-run games again, playing poor defense, looking much like last season. But hey, they're 4-3 right now. That's a good start. Other teams that have not done so well, the Braves are 0-5. That's not good, but the Braves were supposed to be 0-5. They stink. The Twins are 0-7. Wow, that's kind of that's a head-scratcher. That's one of those teams that everybody's talking about coming up, especially after them pushing for a playoff spot last year. They are 0-7 after losing to the White Sox today 4-1. The Cardinals ripped the Brewers earlier today 10-1. Brewers are one of the worst teams in baseball. Cardinals are 4-3 to start the season. The Marlins are beating up on the Mets right now 8-1. Marlins, we talked about them. They have a chance to be okay, but I wouldn't expect much. Cubs suffer a terrible loss despite the fact that they're off to a 5-1 start. Kyle Schwarber blows out his ACL and LCL last week in a collision with center fielder Dexter Fowler in Arizona. That's a big loss for Chicago because he's the kind of guy, young player, probably looking to hit in the 35 home run range this season. So that's a tough loss for the Cubbies, but they have a lot of offense to go around. They're the kind of team that can handle somebody going down in their offense, although you never want to see that, of course. Pirates beat up on the Tigers today 7-4, or at least I should say they beat up on Justin Verlander, who is just not the same pitcher that he was a couple of years back when he was the Cy Young MVP type. So his career has taken a bit of a downward turn. But hey, we're only one week in. And people have been known to say, I won't look at the standings until July, June or July. Something about that is true. Right now, the Orioles are undefeated. That's a great start for the Orioles. Clearly, they're going to start losing some ball games, but they did beat the Red Sox again late today. Chris Davis goes deep to center field to win that one for the Red Sox. Elsewhere, surprises around the league, the Reds are off to a real hot start. They're 5-1. Reds aren't supposed to be real good, so we'll see where that takes them. But they've got a young pitching staff. Jay Bruce is off to a hot start. I mean, they got rid of Aroldis Chapman, who was kind of their marquee player in the closer role. Lots of strange things happen to start the season. We'll see what it looks like in a couple of months. But a hot start doesn't mean anything unless, of course, it does, as the saying might go. Then also, let's take a look at the NHL playoff picture real quick. Those have come out, and the Sharks are going to be playing the Los Angeles Kings in that's a real hot rivalry. So if you're a Sharks fan, that's going to be a big one right out of the gate. Kings Sharks. Dallas is playing Minnesota, St. Louis, Chicago, Anaheim, Nashville. On the other side, we got Florida and the Islanders, Tampa Bay Lightning with the Red Wings, Washington Capitals, the one seed, taking on Philadelphia. And the Penguins playing the Rangers. So that's the Stanley Cup playoff format. We were going to have a guest on today that was going to make some or paint some picture for us of the playoff scene, but he couldn't make it. But his prediction for the Stanley Cup Finals was Ducks Caps. So we'll see. The Caps are one of those teams even more so than the Sharks historically, that just have never gotten it done. So we'll see if this is the year for the Caps. If is this the year that Ovechkin finally takes his team a little bit further. There are smarter people than I when it comes to hockey who are better suited to answer that question. But that's a big storyline in the NHL. And we're wrapping it up here on Say Hey on 90.1 KZFR. This is, of course, brought to you and made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by the likes of Sierra Nevada, producers of fine beer and ale. Sierra Nevada also offers fine dining at their tap room and their restaurant at 1075 East 20th Street in Chico. More info at sierranevada.com. And I will personally just give an extra shout out to Sierra Nevada, who are so generous to us here at KZFR with their donations for the alcohol and beverages that we get to supply at events that help us raise funds for the station. Thank you so much, Sierra Nevada. Anytime I get the chance to give them an extra thanks on air, I look forward to it because they are a very big part of us being able to do what we do here at the station. So thank you, Sierra Nevada. We love you very much. Thank you so much. And we're wrapping it up here on Say Hey. It's 5:58. Make sure you don't miss that game on Wednesday night, Warriors Spurs in Golden State. I checked StubHub yesterday. If you're looking for an aftermarket ticket, it's going to cost you about $500 for standing room. You probably don't have that extra cash laying around to go stand at a basketball game. I know I don't, or at least I shouldn't. So you're probably not going to that game. If you are, I'm jealous, because if things go as they should, the Warriors are going to finish the season as the greatest regular season team, record-wise, in NBA history. And there's been some haters out there this year, old-timers that like to think about how it was better in their day, whether their day was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 5 years ago. People like to talk. But even the likes of Scottie Pippen came out the other evening and said, hey, give credit where credit is due to the Warriors. Win in 72, Steve Kerr, his teammate, called Steph cold-blooded, greatest shooter he's ever seen. Ron Harper coming out saying stuff like that. Jordan telling Klay Thompson at the All-Star break, go and break the record. When you listen to guys like Cedric Ceballos or whoever else, Charles Barkley, they really don't have anything all that interesting to say. And it doesn't mean the Warriors are the greatest team in history. Whether they just simply get 73 wins or they go on to win the NBA title, it doesn't mean they're the best ever. It just means that they get to be a part of the conversation, and you should be excited and interested for that no matter what. If you like basketball, it's a special thing that happened with the Warriors this season one way or the other. So enjoy it, because it's not going to happen again anytime soon. I'll guarantee you the Warriors don't go 74-8 next year. That probably won't happen. So I'm going to enjoy it on Wednesday night, and I believe they will beat the Memphis Grizzlies. It would be very strange if they didn't. So 73 wins on the horizon. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Peace Talks Radio right here on 90.1 KZFR. Stick around for much more on the way.
This is Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. I'm series producer Paul Ingalls. Whether it's the search for inner peace or how to resolve conflict with others in our homes, schools, workplaces, and communities, or between nations, we consider it here on Peace Talks Radio. This is one of our occasional episodes that brings together authors of books that we think contribute to the broader conversation about peacemaking. And the first thing I wanted to say was that our original longer conversations with each of these guests are indeed rich with useful tips and ideas. So I want to encourage you to visit our website to hear either the hour-long version of our show or click on the complete interview links that accompany our partial transcripts there. That's at peacetalksradio.com. Later in this program, a new ebook for young people that helps them understand and appreciate multiculturalism, cooperation, forgiveness, and a whole lot more. And also a conversation with positive thinking researcher and TED Talk star Sean Aker on his 2013 book, Before Happiness. But first, John Deere, an internationally known peacemaker, organizer, lecturer, and author or editor of more than 30 books, mostly about peacemaking, including 2013's The Nonviolent Life. John Deere was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by Desmond Tutu, and our conversation with John Deere started with a story involving Desmond Tutu, the Dalai Lama, and about 20 other famous peacemakers from around the world who'd gathered for a special event in Colorado a few years back.
So we're at this place earlier in the green room, and the Dalai Lama and the Archbishop Tutu are sitting on the couch, and the rest of us are sitting in a big circle, and we're making small talk. And the Dalai Lama says in a very loud voice to Archbishop Desmond Tutu, "You know, Tutu, you're driving us crazy. You got the biggest mouth in the world, and the whole world hates you.